Thank you. You know, I guess it's only fair, Shane, that since I told you what you had to do for your D-Man project, you can tell me what to preach on today. It's interesting preaching in two services because you get a do-over, the second one. And between services, you begin to reflect on, you know, how could I have said that better? Did I leave out anything? Did I, not express myself well here and everything? And so then your prayer is, Lord, don't let the second one go downhill. Make it at least as good, if not better, than the first one. If you got your Bible this morning, turn to Exodus chapter 20. We're going to be looking at the Ten Commandments this morning. But before we do that, let me lead us in a word of prayer. Father, you tell us your word is sharper than a two-edged sword, and Lord, it's a living word. And Father, I don't know how you do this, but every time your word is preached or your word is taught, everybody in the room reads the same thing out of your holy, inerrant word. But you tailor make it for each person where they are in their spiritual walk. And so, Lord, I ask you to do that this morning. Take the words that you have that I'm going to read. Take the words that I have that help explain that, Lord, and tailor make them so that each person hears and applies it to where they are in their spiritual walk. Lord, we Sermon on the Mount. He said this. He said, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of the pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished." What that means then is regard to what we're going to read in Exodus, the Ten Commandments are still valid today. Jesus didn't abolish the Ten Commandments. We still have the Ten Commandments to live by, and I wanted to read all of the Ten Commandments from Exodus chapter 20, and then I want to focus in on one of them. Starting in verse 1. "And God spoke these words, 'I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make of yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven, above earth, or on the earth beneath it, or the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sins of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to thousands of generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone, guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day it is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or your maidservant, nor any animals, nor the aliens within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and mother, so that you may live long in the land your Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. And you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor." Ten Commandments. And we as Christians believe the Ten Commandments. Or do we? There was a survey that was done several years ago by an independent surveying company, not trying to prove anything. It was just an independent survey on the Ten Commandments. And the people they surveyed, they first asked them to self-identify themselves, whether they were non-religious, whether they were religious, but not Christians. And that could be Jewish or it could be, Islam or anything. And then whether they were Christian. And they asked them if they believed in the Ten Commandments. Overwhelmingly, the Christians said, "Yes, we believe in the Ten Commandments." Surprisingly, over 50% of the rest of the group, That's our society in general, said they still believe the Ten Commandments are valid. But then they ask him to do something very interesting. They ask him to rank the Ten Commandments and how important they were. The first one important, and so forth and everything. Universally, everybody in together, Christians, non-Christians, those with religious but non-Christians, the number one they rank was thou shalt not murder. But you know what came out number 10 on the list? The fourth commandment, keep the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Only 66% of Christians said that commandment was still valid today. It's the neglected commandment, and that's what I want us to look at this morning, the neglected commandment. And so the first question we need to ask is, what is the purpose of the Sabbath? Why did God institute the Sabbath? Why did he put it in place in the first place? Well, there's probably a lot of more reasons than I have, but I found three reasons, at least, that God instituted the Sabbath. Verse 11 says, God rested on the seventh day. Now, wait a minute. Does God need to rest? I mean, God is an all-powerful God. God is an all-present God. God knows no boundaries. God is timeless. Does he need to rest? Isaiah put it this way in Isaiah 40:20. He said, have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is an everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. God does not need to rest. But we are told here, and we see it in the creation account in Genesis, that God rested on the seventh day. Why? Why would God do that when he didn't need to do it? He did it as an example for us. He knew when he created us that we cannot go 24/7. We need rest in our lives. We have to have rest. That's the way we're created. I don't know if you've been up all night long for whatever reason, but it takes a toll on you. You got to have some sleep. You can't go. You can't go, go, go. In Leviticus 23:3 says this, God says, 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on the Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. You see, we know that we need to rest. But sometimes we don't do it, do we? We have a tendency to kind of push ourselves and push ourselves and push ourselves. In fact, a National Sleep Foundation, I didn't even know there was a National Sleep Foundation, but there is a National Sleep Foundation. And they did a survey, and they found that 44% of the respondents, this is nationwide, 44% of the respondents said they were tired 2 to 4 days a week. And another 28% said they were tired 5 to 7 days per week. That means 72% of our population is sleepy multiple days of the week. And the interesting thing was, one of the leading states was Colorado. Over 30%, according to the survey, over 30% of the adults in Colorado do not get the recommended 7 hours of sleep a night. We run until we almost drop. We run until we're exhausted. We go and go and go and go. We're like the Energizer Bunny in those commercials. Barbara Brown Taylor writes this. She's a Christian writer. She says, some of us have made an idol of exhaustion. The only time we know when we've done enough is when we're running on empty and when the ones we love most are the ones we see the least. When we lie down at night to sleep, we offer our full appointment calendars to God in lieu of prayer, believing that God, who is almost as busy as we are, will surely understand. God did not need to rest, but he did when he created the world on that seventh day because he wanted to do an example for us. Because we need rest. And that's the first reason he instituted the Sabbath, so that we could rest, this day of rest. The second reason I think he instituted the Sabbath was to trust. Was to trust him. Think about where the Hebrews had come out of. They'd come out of Egypt. The Ten Commandments were given in that Exodus. And they came out of Egypt where they had worked sun up to sundown 7 days a week. Because that's what the Egyptians required them to do. The area they were going to, all the lands around where the promised land where they were going to, did not observe a Sabbath. They worked 7 days a week. And that's understandable because it was an agrarian society. They had crops they had to tend to. They had animals they had to tend to. And so it was natural just to work 7 days a week. But God said, no. You need to have a day of rest. You need to have a day of Sabbath. In fact, that's made evident when they were going through the Exodus and they started griping about not having enough to eat. And so God gave them manna. Just a side note, you know what that word manna means, don't you? It literally means, what is it? Because they picked it up and they said, what is this stuff God's given us? But he gave them manna. And in Exodus 16, 27, 30, it says, on the seventh day, some of the people went out together, the manna, and they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and instructions? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you food for 2 days. Each of you say, where you are, stay where you are, and do not leave your place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. God provided in 6 days what the rest of the society around them were taking 7 days to do. God said, I will provide for you. Trust me. If you only work 6 days, the seventh day, the day of Sabbath, I will provide for you. Modern day example, Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A closes their stores on Sunday. And yet they are one of the most successful fast food chains in our country. I grew up in a state that had the blue law. Anybody grew up in states that had blue laws? Anybody know what a blue law is? A few of you do. Okay. Blue laws were on Sunday, a lot of things were closed. Unless there were essential stores like grocery stores and so forth. And even in the grocery stores, you'd go in and they would have blankets covering whole areas. You remember that? They had these blankets covering whole areas because you couldn't buy those products because it was the blue law. Well, the blue laws were repealed in the state where I grew up. And so they took the blankets down. Anything was able to buy, anything on that day. Malls started opening on Sunday. And very interesting, right after that happened, there was a survey that was done. And the survey showed that for the stores that were open 7 days a week, when they used to be open 6 days a week, there were no more products sold in 7 days than there were in the 6 days. More convenient for people to go, but there was no more products sold in 7 days, they were 6 days. We need to trust God. And one way we can show that we trust God is through observing the Sabbath. The author Henry Nouwen says this. He says, in general, we are very busy people. Our calendars are filled with appointments. Our days and weeks filled with engagements. And our years filled with plans and products. There is seldom a period in which we do not know what to do. We move through life in such a distracted way that we don't even take time to rest and to wonder if all the things we say, think, or do are worth saying, thinking, and doing. You see, we need to trust God that it's okay not to get everything done, to leave some things undone. Now, if you have a personality like me, that just grates against you, man. I like having things done. I like having things tied up. I don't like things open. I don't like having a project when I start. I don't like leaving it. I like finishing it. But we need to trust that it's okay to have things undone. But the real part of that is we need to trust God to guide us to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. We need to guide what needs to be accomplished. We need to trust him as he guides us to say this is important to do. One of the classes that I teach at seminary is a practicum. All of our students at the master's level have to go through a 9-month practicum, 2 semesters back to back, where they are serving in a ministry. And a lot of these are experienced, you know, ministers, but the most of them are inexperienced. Some of them no experience at all. I mean, I actually directed that program for a while, and I would have students come and say, where do I serve? Can you help me get a place to serve in a church? I'm not serving anywhere in a church. And yet they were enrolled in seminary. And so at the end of that 9-month practicum, we always have an exit interview. And I always ask the same question of every student in that exit interview. I've taught this class for 18 years. And at the end of the exit interview, I asked several questions, but there's one class and I always ask. I said, what in this ministry practicum did you learn about ministry? And they said, ministry's hard. Ministry's tough. You see, we need to trust God. Because also during that time, I would say to those students, a ministry opportunity is not a ministry obligation. Everything that comes our way that we can do ministry to, we don't have to do. We do what God leads us to do. We need to trust that God will lead us to get done what needs to get done. And we need to trust God that always going and always doing is not always the best. Busyness does not equal effectiveness. There's a lady in the Bible who found that out. A lady by the name of Martha. She was all wound around the axle, just to use a hillbilly term from my growing up in the Ozarks. She was wound around the axle, man, because Jesus was coming to her house. He was coming to her house, and I mean, she was, boy. This is what the story goes in Luke 10, 38 through 42. As Jesus and disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, they came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him to her home. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. Some came to Jesus and said, "Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me." But the Lord said to her, "My dear Martha, you are worried and upset over all the details. There is only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her." She was all upset because she had all the stuff to do. And Mary was sitting, learning from Jesus. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine sitting at Jesus' feet in real time? And Mary was sitting there and just soaking it all up. And Martha said, "Tell her to help me." And Jesus said, "She's doing the most important thing. Not all this stuff over here. This is all peripheral stuff. This is all stuff. Don't be so concerned about it. Be concerned about following me." So you see, God instituted the Sabbath for rest so we could have rest. He knew that. He instituted it so we could trust him. But he also instituted it so that we could focus on him. In the text in Exodus 20:11, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, making the Sabbath day holy means that God set it apart for himself. He set it apart so that his people can focus on him. We're told to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. But what does it mean to keep it holy? What does it mean for us today to do that? Well, let me share with you several things. First, it means we focus on God as our creator. Remember, the Sabbath came out of the creation. God created the entire universe. He created us as human beings. And for 6 days, the Lord made the heaven and earth and sea, and then he rested on the seventh day. We focus on him as our creator. But we also focus on him as our redeemer. Deuteronomy 5:15 says, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. They were in Egypt, working those 7 days a week, sun up to sunset. And God brought them out and he instituted the Sabbath and said, you need a day to rest. You need to rest. But you also need to focus on me as your Redeemer, the one that brought you out of slavery. Now, you and I are not Israelites. We've not been Egypt. But we've been slaves to sin, every one of us. And God as our Redeemer brought us out of that slavery from darkness into light. And we need to focus on him as our Redeemer. The third reason here we talk about how to do the Sabbath is focus on God as our sustainer. Psalm 55:22 says, cast your cares on the Lord and he will sustain you. You will never let the righteous be shaken. God sustains us through life. Everything that we have, everything that I own, because I don't own it, God owns it. God has provided it for me. He's provided everything. He's provided my house. He provided my car. He's provided my 401k that pays me my income of being semi-retired. He provides me and my family for everything. He's a sustainer. He will take me through the dark times. He will take me through the good times. He will walk with me. He will sustain me through this life until it ends. But we also need to focus on God as our Lord. In Exodus 31, verse 12 and 13 says this, then the Lord said to Moses, say to the Israelites, you must observe my Sabbath. This will be a sign between you and me for the generations to come, so that you may know that I am the Lord who makes you holy. We need to focus on God as our Creator, as our Redeemer, as our Sustainer, and as our Lord. In addition to the rest element, we trust God with everything. And then we focus on God. Those are the three reasons I think God instituted the Sabbath. But the question comes, we're in 2023. How do we live the Sabbath? How do we live that thing out? Well, first of all, let me say that it doesn't always happen on Sunday, especially for your pastor. Sabbath is not a day of rest for a pastor. It's a day when he's involved in preaching two services, and he's involved in directing, and he has people come to him with issues and problems and so forth. And so it's not a day of rest for him. And it may not be a day of rest for you. You may have a responsibility, a leadership position in the church where you can't rest either and you need to be here and be a part of that. So it may not just be Sunday. It may be another day. But we need to carve out a day of rest. But what does that look like? Well, let me give you four key things here. First of all, stop working. Stop working. But that brings up the question, what is work? Well, if you have a job where you have income from, and that income used to support your family and so forth, then that's work. But what about other things? Something that may be work to you may not be work to me, and vice versa. When I was pastoring, I had a guy in my church that had several acres, and he had a massive garden. And just about every day when he came home from work, he'd go out in the garden and work. And on Saturday, he'd see occasionally out there. Sunday afternoon, he'd go out and work his garden. And I asked him about it one day, and he said, my garden's my therapy. He says, I love working out there. I love just being out there and being with those plants, and they're just so relaxing and so peaceful. And I said, Jack, you've got to be kidding. That's work to me. That wouldn't be restful. It wouldn't be peaceful to me. But see, what is work to some people is rest to another person. So stop working. And then enjoy rest. You know, I think that we have a problem for the most part enjoying rest. We feel guilty when we do. You know, when you talk to people and you say, how are things going? The usual response anymore is, man, I'm just so busy. Just so busy. So busy. I'm tired. Worn out. We do a small group in our home. And we have one guy that has a full-time job at Parkview Hospital, And then he's got a side ministry that is a full-time ministry on the side. And he's trying to do both. And right now I'm kind of working with him. How does he, you know, let go of one and, you know, balance that and everything. And just about every Wednesday night when he comes to our small group, he says, I'm just so tired. You know, I don't know who said this originally, but somebody said sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is take a nap. You know, we need to enjoy rest. God made us to have rest, and we shouldn't feel guilty when we rest. So part of observing the Sabbath is to rest. And then to practice delight. Think about the creation. God created on the first day. He created on the second day, and the third day, and the fourth day, and the sixth day. What did he say at the end of each day? It is good. He delighted in what he did. He delighted in creating the world. He delighted in creating us. And so, delighting in something, finding joy in something, is a godly thing. So what gives you joy and delight? Being with your family? Being out in nature? Being involved with some kind of hobby? Reading a good book? Listening to good music? Whatever it is, whatever delights you, is something you should do. Now, I'm a coffee person, okay? And sometimes sitting down in the morning, especially when it's getting warmer, sitting on the patio, first thing there, drinking a cup of coffee, that is just delight. And sometimes I find myself just praising God. Lord, thank you. Let somebody discover you take these little beans and grind them up and make this wonderful stuff out of them. Whatever delights you. Practice delight. And then enjoy the company of the believers. Enjoy the company of other believers. You realize that God is in community. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. That's a small group of three. And God is in community together. And he created us to be in community. And we need to enjoy each other's company. And I'm not talking about officially being in church, Bible study, worship, whatever. I'm talking about just enjoying each other's company. Being together, having fun, talking, having a cookout, going to some sporting event together, whatever it is, just enjoy each other's company. And then last and most important is to focus on God. The Sabbath ought to focus on God. We can do a lot of things that we enjoy and find delight in it. We can be with other people and find delight in it. We can be out in nature or whatever. But we need to worship God in that process. When we're out in creation, whether it's hiking or camping or boating or fishing or hunting or whatever, we need to recognize God for creating this wonderful, wonderful world out here that we have and give him honor and praise for that. So those are several things you can do to keep the Sabbath. Stop working, enjoy rest, practice delight, enjoy the company of other believers, but most of all, focus on God. Now, I grew up in the state of Missouri. Now, I did pronounce that right. For those of you who are not there, it's not Missouri, it's Missouri. Unless you're from over on the St. Louis side, then it is Missouri. But they've got it wrong. But I grew up in Missouri. My dad was a construction engineer. We moved around a lot. I lived in five different towns and cities in Missouri growing up. And when I was in fifth and sixth grade, we lived down close to Branson. Now, most people know where Branson is, okay? We were about 45 minutes from Table Rock Lake, big lake that's half in Missouri and half in Arkansas. And my dad decided that he was going to buy a ski boat. He'd never skied before. None of us ever skied before. He'd never driven a boat before. But he was going to buy a ski boat, and we were going to become a family to ski. So almost every Saturday during the summer, we were down Table Rock Lake. And I was the oldest, 12 years old, and I get to be the guinea pig of learning how to ski. Now, my dad, you know, he was, you know, smart enough not to get me the big long skis. He got me junior skis so I could learn those junior skis. And so I was like most people skiing, you know, I'd get up and fall down, get up and fall down. And, you know, but finally, after a while, I got the hang of it. You know, and I was skiing, you know. And I was going by, and I was seeing the girls and other boats, and I was leaning back and waving, you know. And I, you know, it was cool being skinned like that. But one Saturday something happened that never happened before. Like I said, my dad had never driven a ski boat before. And somebody cut in front of him, and my dad just naturally just took the throttle and throttled all the way back. Well, you know what happened? I started sinking down. And my dad looked back, not being an experienced ski boat driver, hit the throttle all the way forward. And my skis were under the water and just jerked me up out of the water, and I just started going across the top of the water, hit me in the face and just bumping up and down, and I think I drank about half the lake, and I've gone about 100 yards that way, and then all of a sudden I remembered, and I thought, Greg, you can let go of the ski rope. And so I did. And all was fine after that. I tell you that story because I think it's a good picture of ministry. Sometimes you're up on top and it's just smooth sailing. Everything's going great. Everything is wonderful. And other times you're flat down and you're just being dragged along. And you're bouncing along and things are hitting you in the face. So the question is, how can the pastor let go of the ski rope? How can the pastor let go of the rope? Well, one way to do that is through a sabbatical. A sabbatical. Now, that word means out of or pertaining to a Sabbath. So it comes out of the Sabbath concept of rest, needing rest, of focusing on God, of enjoying the company of other people. And so, is it biblical, though? That's the question we should ask. Is it biblical? Well, it's not against the Bible, but there's no place in the Bible where it really says that pastors ought to take sabbaticals. But I think there's some principles in the Bible that apply here. One is the principle of the Sabbath we've already talked about. That 6 days, seventh day of rest. But when they entered the land, God said this to them. Leviticus 25:3-4. He says, work the land for 7 years. Excuse me, for 6 years. And on the seventh year, let it rest. Let it rest. Let it be fallow. The land cannot be worked continually. The Apostle Paul talks about how the congregations are to take care of their pastors. And so I think there's a biblical precedent that it is good for a pastor to take a sabbatical. Even though the Bible doesn't directly command it, it is good, I think. I think there's some precedence there. So let me give you some reasons why it's good for a pastor to take a sabbatical. The first is a sabbatical allows the pastor to temporarily step away from the demands of ministry. Ministry is very, very demanding. A pastor walks through with people through times of turmoil, through deaths, through illnesses and sicknesses. I'll never forget when I was pastoring down in the Houston, Texas area before we came to Colorado in the mid-1980s. Had a lady in the church that had terminal cancer. And in her last days, she was in hospice. And I went to visit her twice every week. And every week, she went downhill. And I saw her go downhill. And she struggled with that. She struggled with that. During that same time, I had the, I won't call it privilege, I had the experience of walking through an ICU children's ward and seeing children that were just hanging on with their life. That takes a toll on you, folks. Your pastor has walked through some things with some of you that have always been there for you, that's taken a toll on you and has beaten you down in life. And pastors vicariously take part of that. And so time and time again, pastors are involved in ministry that's difficult. And a sabbatical allows them to step away from that demands of ministry for a short while. Also, a sabbatical allows the church to be less dependent on the pastor. God put pastors as under-shepherd over the church to lead, to guide, to teach, to protect. And sometimes the church can become a little bit too dependent on the pastor. They should depend upon the pastor, but sometimes they become a little bit too dependent on the pastor. And the sabbatical allows the church to not depend so much on the pastor and letting the leadership of the church step up and do things that the pastor would normally do and show that they're not as dependent on him as they really become too dependent on him. A sabbatical allows the church and the pastor to trust God at a deeper level. Trust God at a deeper level. Because the pastor is going to be gone on his sabbatical, and he's got to trust God that things aren't going to fall apart. And you guys have got to trust God that things can keep on going without your pastor here. We did a church plant in the early 2000s up in Colorado Springs. And it was a plant that was planned out of a large church. And they'd already started home groups up there for people that live in that area. And the idea was to start a church up in that area. And we began that and eventually began having services in a school. And for the first 2 years we had services in that school, I did not take a Sunday off. And my wife came to me, as only our wives can, then, and said, "You need to take a Sunday off. The church is not going to fall apart. God's going to protect it. God's going to take everything. We need a vacation." And so we did. Took a vacation, took 2 Sundays off. And you know what? When I came back, the church was still there. They were still meeting. They didn't disband. Everything was going on. You know, sabbatical allows a church and a pastor to trust God at a deeper level. It also allows a pastor to gain different perspectives. I already talked to Pastor Shane, and he shared with me what he's going to do. And one of the first things he's going to do is visit some of the churches where he has friends, pastoral friends in. See how their church is doing. See what's happening in their church. Just encourage them. Gives him a different perspective. And also, a sabbatical allows a pastor to be renewed mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Ministry is hard, like I said. And sometimes we just need to be renewed mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Also, a sabbatical provides time of refreshing for the pastor and his family. A time of refreshing. The interesting thing about ministry is the toll that it takes on a pastor's family. You see, there were many times when I was pastoring, when I got home at night, that I did not have the energy that I wanted to have to invest in my family. But the energy just wasn't there. I was worn out from meeting with people, from counseling with people, from being in hospital visits. And I was just worn out, and I did not have the energy that I wanted to have because of the demands of ministry. Sabbatical provides that time of refreshing for the pastor and his family. Not only is Pastor Shane taking sabbatical, but Stephanie and the rest of the family are taking a sabbatical along with him. And it's going to be a time of refreshing for them. And finally, a sabbatical shows your pastor how much you love him. Shows him how much you love him. Because you're allowing him to do this. You're sanctioning him to do this. You're encouraging him to do this. And you're saying, "Pastor, we as the congregation want to provide this for you. We want to encourage you. We want you to get away to be able to refresh and renew and get a different perspective. Because in doing that, we know that when you come back, you will be able to invest more than when you leave on your sabbatical." So I want us to do something here in the ending. I want Shane to come up here. And he said Stephanie was going to join us, but maybe she... somebody I think is going to go out and get her. Anyway, you know, a sabbatical is a good thing because it's good for the church and it's good for the pastor. So we're going to have a time of prayer, and Stephanie helped him make her way in. But what I want us to do is I want you to get up. If you feel led to get up, and here comes the Cannon family. Get up if you feel led. I want you to come up, and we're going to lay hands on the pastor and his family. And this larger group, you may not be able to touch each one of them and lay a hand on each one of them directly, but you can time a sabbatical. It'll be a time of renewal, a time of refreshing, a time of rest, a time of learning, a time of growing closer together as a family because they can spend more quality time together. Would I just ask you to bless Shane and Stephanie and her family during this time? Lord, I lift up to you this church, this congregation that is you pastors, that during this time of sabbatical, that there'll be a time where they could lean into you more and depend more upon you, and leaders could rise up, and even new leaders rise up to be able to do the things that need to be done week in and week out. Lord, I know that you provided for preachers to come in and preach Sunday after Sunday, but there's still the need for things happening during the week where ministry needs are there, administrative needs are there, and I pray, Lord, that you would just let the leadership of this church see that you are in control and that they can depend upon you. And Lord, I just lift up Shane as he depends upon you, that the leaders here can step into the gap. We ask this in your mighty, wonderful name, Jesus, and all God's people say, Amen.